Straight Talk on WRHI is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Good Pharmacy is with us, your hometown pharmacy. Ebenezer Road to Camden Avenue in Rock Hill, as is highspeedweb.net that streams our signal 24-7, 365. State Senator Wes Clymer joins us today on this holiday, MLK Day, across the nation. And we appreciate him coming here. And he's brought, let's see, two of his five children.
That's right, yeah.
And his beautiful wife, who somehow has managed to endure not having five children, but I was going to say a sixth, but that would have no respect for the state senator. How you doing, buddy?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Nice to see you having a day off with the family.
I know. No tie today.
No tie.
We had did some family stuff this morning, and hopefully we'll get outside and play a little bit this afternoon.
Good day to play.
Yeah.
Good day to play. So, speaking of play, you've started another year of frivolity down in Columbia.
That's right. Right. Came into session on Tuesday. First order of business, the Senate voted to put the education reform bill in what's called special order status, which basically means it's up for debate. It is now being debated, amended, and I think the Senate will probably stay on that bill for at least 2 weeks before there's ultimately a vote up or down.
So I did a show here the other day with a young man who is at South Point High School, involved with this SC for ED, you know, the teachers, what have you. And in the course of that conversation, he mentioned to me that the number one issue for educators is not money, although that's high up there.
Yep.
It's discipline. It's the whole issue of discipline. Hands are tied, you know, can't do this, can't do that. How do you go about resolving that issue? Since if you do anything to discipline a child these days, you end up in court.
And that ultimately is the problem, is that we have court precedents that, to a substantial degree, limit flexibility. And then there's also just a general aversion to being sued. And I think what we should all be able to agree on is if you care about your kid's school, you need to teach your child to respect the teacher. And you yourself as the parent need to respect the teacher. And when the teacher does something to discipline your child, you don't need to go and complain to the teacher. You need to reinforce that discipline with your children.
Of course, you're talking like a rational human being. And unfortunately, I mean, when you listen to the teachers talk to you, the issues that they have to deal with before they ever crack a book.
Sure, yeah.
Is just unbelievable. I mean, it's almost like half of their job is to be a social whatever.
So, and as your prior guest told you, they'd have to do that.
Yeah.
With hands tied behind their backs.
But that's what I don't understand about the hands tied behind their back. I mean, I don't know why a teacher faced with that kind of adversity can't get right in that young kid's face and say, look, this is the way it's going to be here.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, you can just get out. Yeah. And then be supported by those that he works for in that school.
Right.
If you have people who...
That's the way it ought to happen.
And I don't understand why we can't make that happen.
Yeah. It's just... I mean, I'm dumbfounded by it, too.
I mean, why pass all this legislation if you have just disruption in the classroom?
Well, look, I think ultimately matters of discipline are matters that local communities ought to have the prevailing input on, right? I mean, so that's ultimately, and we talk about this all the time, I don't want the state forcing stuff down on districts, unfunded mandates. You have to do this, you have to do that. We need to do less of those things, and especially in education, we need to devolve as much decision-making power as possible to the local level.
So the school boards need to support their principals.
Well, and
they should be supporting
the
teachers.
We are blessed in York County with excellent school boards, right? And we have some fantastic leaders on those school boards. And I'm confident they're doing everything they can to support their teachers.
All right. Also with the issue of education comes the governor's call to to take some of the surplus that we'll talk about later
and
do a $3,000 across-the-board pay increase. Now, does he mean across-the-board, like for everybody, even
That's
those?
That's my understanding. There are two competing schools of thought on how to do a teacher pay raise, right? And so implicit in that is that there's going to be a teacher pay raise, right? One school of thought, which you just described, the governor's, is just everybody $3,000, right? Another school of thought, and I think this is what the Senate will probably do in the budget, although, you know, that'll happen later in the year. Still plenty of time to take input, but my suspicion is the Senate is just going to say, $220 million has to be given back to the districts. The districts can only use it for teacher pay raises, but let the districts have some flexibility around, well, we're really having a hard time retaining sixth grade math teachers, right? So maybe we have to plus that up more. And so giving the districts some flexibility versus just saying one size fits all $3,000 is really the debate. But there is no debate around the fact that the state has to do a better job to pay teachers more, to make it a more appealing profession, to retain and recruit high-quality educators.
So is this true or false? This is the second year of a five-year plan to bump up salaries?
I think it's substantially true, although, you know, we don't know what will happen out in the future, but this is certainly the second year in a row there will be a big teacher pay increase in the budget.
And, of course, as we have talked before, it seems to me that if we're going to be competitive with the private sector, which is always looking for the brightest and the best, that you don't have any alternative but to get these base salaries up, way up from where they are.
Yeah. I mean, we say all the time we want to run government like a business, right? Well, if a business has trouble recruiting high-quality folks to do an essential job at that business, well, then you got to change the compensation. You got to be, look to the market and try to attract the best talent you can. And that's exactly what the state and local communities, local districts, because all of our local districts here in York County supplement in excess of what the state pay scale is. So, across the board, if we want to attract and retain high quality teachers, they need more compensation. But I will say, to your earlier point, that is a part of the solution, but that is not the solution.
The other part, of course, is all these state regulations and all the stuff that they have to do, reports and testing, and there's a long list of things that you all have hopefully vetted out in this bill, or will have vetted out before we pass it.
Yeah, I'll say at this point, I'm firmly undecided on how I'm going to vote on this education reform bill. I think, frankly, I think everybody ought to be at this point, because it's probably going to change a lot. I would not be surprised if if there are in excess of 100 amendments to this bill that have to get voted on before ultimately it's passed. And so I'm reserving judgment. Listening to folks, I've gotten a ton of emails over the last few weeks from parents and educators and, folks who just have an interest in this from across York County, a variety of various, input on a variety of subjects. And I'm sort of taking it all in, and we'll make the up or down decision in a couple weeks when the time comes.
One other part of the education bill is higher education.
Yeah.
Now, the governor is saying, I want to put in so many dollars to freeze the tuitions again this year. What do you think? Do you think that's and then what about these eroding buildings? Because that's another thing he's talking about.
I think that
bond
is
bill. Not a bond bill, but take up chunk of this money and repair these state buildings that need to be repaired.
So tuition is an exceedingly complicated issue. I think there's no doubt that the state ought to be investing in some of that critical infrastructure that you just—I mean, we look around at Winthrop, and Winthrop does a good job of this. They don't come to the General Assembly asking for fluff. They come to the General Assembly say, "Hey, we have this, 48-year-old air conditioner unit that's costing us X thousand dollars a year to maintain, and if we could replace that, then we would save money." But the state can help do stuff like that. But ultimately, I think if you look through, I'll pick on—I'm only picking on him because I've looked at it. But if you look at the University of South Carolina, for example, go take a look at the ratio of professors to administrators. Go take I would put that question to any of the institutions of higher education. I think that ultimately the tuition problem is solved in two different ways. One of those is investment from the state. Another one is very, very significant, meaningful cost cutting on the part of these institutions of higher learning.
Interesting. All right, we could go on for an hour about that. So a new word in my vocabulary, thanks to the General Assembly, is something I've never heard before, called roll-up appropriations.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's which is, I guess, a secret way to get some money in there that nobody knows about because it's lost in these big earmarks, another way of putting it. So when you talk about a big bill like an education bill, do you worry that we could get some roll-up or earmarked pieces?
Well, so the education reform bill doesn't spend money.
Okay.
The budget spends money.
All right.
Over the off season, over the summer when the General Assembly wasn't in session, I started working with someone you and I have talked about on this show before, Senator Harputlian, and Senate Majority Leader Shane Massey, and we have introduced a change to the Senate rules to, now this gets kind of complicated, but to create a point of order so that any time money is rolled up in the budget where it is not disclosed, then any senator can raise a point of order, and that line is just struck from the budget. My view is that the state, there are plenty of instances when the state can serve as a in a supplementary role with a local community on, say, water infrastructure or, you know, economic development projects, so on and so forth. I'm not saying all these earmarks are bad. What I am saying is they all should be disclosed. And right now, there are zero out of 170 members of the General Assembly who know what is in the budget. Zero. Why? Because the chairman of Ways and Means know what the hidden earmarks are for the House, right? But he doesn't know what the hidden earmarks are for the Senate. And the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee knows what the hidden earmarks are for the Senate, but the chairman of Ways and Means doesn't know that. So we have a situation right now where zero out of 170 lawmakers know everything that's in the budget. That is an unacceptable circumstance. We have to have transparency around the way taxpayers' money is spent, and I think we'll get a vote on this rules change, if not next week, then the following week.
Great idea, but it's still dependent upon somebody like yourself to have read the whole bill.
Line by line.
And figured out, because if nobody raises the issue, then it gets passed.
Right. And I introduced an amendment to the budget in, I can't remember if it was 2017 or 2018, but one of the first budgets I read through to try to knock this stuff out so that it couldn't be rolled up, couldn't be hidden. That was ultimately unsuccessful, but now we're coming back again, and I think we have a pretty good shot at fixing the problem this time.
All right, let's switch gears. Let's talk about what I think is an unbelievable number, a $1.8 billion surplus.
Yeah.
Now, is that all new revenue, or is that just we've been so good at watching our pennies and dimes and nickels that we've got a bunch left over plus a surplus coming in from new revenue?
It's the fact that the economy's doing really well. And, you know, there are some members. So the way that the budget estimates are done is the state's, you know, Board of Economic Advisors, and they put all these, you know, do all these intense complicated equations to try to figure out what a revenue estimate is. Well, some of these guys were around during the Great Recession, so they're very conservative with their revenue estimates. And so that's why, you know, there typically is a surplus, but it is rarely this big. Now, it is also important to note that there's two different kinds of money in the state budget, right? There's recurring, that's money that is expected to come in year after year after year, and then there's non-recurring, it's one-time money. So the recurring money that you can use for things like teacher salaries, as an example, is around $850 million, right? And then the non-recurring comes in at around $1 billion. And so you can use those funds in different ways. But I want to point out, I did some math. 2010 to 2018, the size of South Carolina's economy is up 43%, 2010 to 2018. South Carolinians' income, right? So total income of all, aggregate income of all South Carolinians is up 48%. These are great numbers. Over that same period of time, the state general fund, the budget, is up 61%. So the budget is growing 42% faster than the economy, and it's growing 27% faster than South Carolinians' personal income. And so I would say that is an exceedingly compelling argument for using a substantial portion of this surplus to return to the taxpayers in the form of tax cuts.
Well, you anticipated by my next question. That $50 was nice, although I never saw it.
Right, yeah.
Mrs. K grabbed that and whoop.
That'll be a lot bigger this year.
So, two things. What really should be returned to the taxpayers? And what about tax reform?
Yeah.
Which keeps getting kicked down the road. One committee studies it, another committee studies it. What? Where are we?
It is. Look, I think the people make the politics of tax reform out to be much more complicated than it really is. I mean, I think if you do a meaningful pro-growth tax reform that includes tax relief, which we can clearly afford, that is not a politically dicey issue. That's a political home run. And so I would hope that this is the year, finally, when the General Assembly rids itself of some of this antique tax code that was built around an agrarian society, and we modernize this thing to account for the fact that we're now living in the 21st century. And obviously, with surplus after surplus after surplus after surplus after surplus, the people of South Carolina are taxed too much.
Why not, as the governor has proposed in the past, why not reduce the top rates?
Yeah.
Right?
That's a layup.
Get rid of all these earmarks,
yep.
You know, that all these exceptions or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, the exemptions.
Exemptions,
yeah, yeah.
300 or so exemptions that are out there.
Well, now, so you got to divide these exemptions into categories.
All right.
One category is an exemption that confers a narrow benefit and distributes the cost of that benefit broadly, right? So that's a concentrated benefit with a dispersed cost. That would be like a special interest tax break, right?
Sure.
Another is an exemption that has a dispersed benefit with dispersed costs. That would be a sales tax exemption on medical health care,
yeah,
or you know, your utility bill, your power bill. Those are the types of exemptions where it's not some special interest group that lobbied up really well and got something through. That is saying, look, we're going to confer this benefit across the entirety of the population. And
right.
So I think when we talk about eliminating exemptions, we can't just, you know, you.
I got you.
You see what I'm saying?
Like, I got you.
Yeah.
You want to eliminate exemptions. You want to keep those in place that benefit everybody.
They benefit everybody, right.
And get rid of the ones that just benefit certain classes of people.
That's right.
Or companies,
yep,
or businesses or what have you. So I go back to the question is, do you think we will get meaningful tax reform this year? Is there anything left to study?
Talk about something.
Tommy Pope has been studying this thing forever.
And he has done a really good,
yeah,
job. He has taken a significant leadership role in this conversation and stuck his neck out and made some pretty bold suggestions. And I'm hopeful that this year finally gets done.
Well, with all that being said, we have to do this thing called take a break and remind everybody while your kids are playing with your phone over there and probably calling Australia while you're sitting here talking that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Okay, Monroe and Jack, both of you guys, right? You're out of school, but you can always keep on learning. Because here at Substation 2, we prepare fresh subs and salads 7 days a week right before your eyes. And the way we do it is in these white letters. And we're all going to say it together out loud as we can, when I say three. Are we ready? One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden.
Not bad, boys. Job, back, yeah, after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
There are lots of reasons why people like dining at Substation 2.
Hit the spot, definitely.
Friends are great, and the company's great, and the food is fantastic. Bread's fresh, and they make my special for me every day.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Good Pharmacy, building trust for four generations.
This is pharmacist Kia Hicklin. Enjoy our spacious new modern look and take advantage of Rock Hill's original drive-thru with pickup and drop-off service.
My mom loves Good Pharmacy.
Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue, Rock Hill.
This is Danny Rogers with Paul Davis Restoration. When you are faced with damage to your home, there is only one company you need to know, Paul Davis Restoration. Only one company with 50 years of corporate support and 20 years of local presence. Only one company with 8 trained and certified water mitigation techs on call and ready to respond to your loss 24/7, 365. There is only one company you need to know. Call Paul Davis Restoration, 803-329-1140.
These days, everybody wants peace of mind. Some people do yoga. Some meditate. Me? I use Ready Home Security from Comporium. Ready Home lets me monitor my house, even when I'm hundreds of miles away. With Ready Home, I can use my phone or tablet to set my alarm, turn on lights, lock the doors, even control my thermostat. Yoga's great, but knowing that everything's great at home, now that's peace of mind. That's Ready Home. To learn more about Ready Home, visit Comporium.com or call 888-403-2667.
Relax. Love your car payment with an auto loan from Founders Federal Credit Union. If you're ready to buy your new car and start making those unforgettable memories, Founders features an easy online application, flexible terms, low rates, 24-hour account access with Founders Online, and fast, friendly service. Visit Relax, joinfounders.com, or one of our more than 30 offices to see if you qualify for membership. Relax. Love your car payment with Founders. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
Have you ever wondered why so many people enjoy dining at Substation 2?
Good fresh food, even fresher than Subway, and it's also on a paleo diet.
I like the people, I like the food, and being picked on.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. State Senator Wes Clymer is here today. Aren't you proud that I started off the new year by calling you Clymer and not Hayes?
Yeah, I mean, I knew it'd get there eventually.
You've made a marker by my
mind. It takes
a little time for stupid people to realize who we're talking to. All right, a couple of other issues that obviously people are very interested in. Let me take over what I think is the easier one. I hope it's the easier one. And that is the status of the Carolina Panthers. The state of South Carolina has gone to the mat.
Yeah.
I mean, the governor has put everything on the line, pulling all the people together. You and Gary Simrell and Tommy Pope and the rest of our delegation work feverishly to get that law changed so that a big entity like the Panthers and the economic impact they'll bring to South Carolina is treated just like a manufacturer.
That's exactly right. Right. So the legislation we passed last year, the whole idea was just to let a professional sports team have the same sort of tax incentives that a manufacturer or a hotel or anybody else would have. And that took some doing, but it got done. So,
all right, correct me if I'm wrong. I know this is a big, big deal. I know this. The numbers are astronomical.
It is
compared
a transformational project.
It is. Transformational project.
Yeah.
And I know that it takes a lot of time to work through all the T's that need to be crossed and the I's that need to be dotted.
Yeah.
Is there anything more you can tell me about where we are? Because here we are in 2020, and I know they were on a pretty tight schedule to get things rocking and rolling.
Yeah, I think the county council continues to do due diligence. I think they're, you know, as you said, cross every T, dot every I. They are undergoing a thorough evaluation of the relative merits. And hopefully that'll all get wrapped up sometime in the next few weeks, and then the Panthers will start breaking ground.
So you don't have any more insider information other than that?
No, I mean, it's before the county council.
Okay. It's in their
you
lap.
You may know more than I do, Manning, with a, that was a knowing laugh.
Oh, some things are
no, but I do. Look, I appreciate any. Look, and I said this during the debate in the General Assembly when the senator from Richland started asking a lot of questions.
Yeah.
I don't begrudge anybody for asking questions. I think, you know, the taxpayers expect you to ask questions. And so the fact that the county's doing due diligence is ultimately serves the interest of the taxpayers.
Well, and I think the taxpayers need to understand that anytime you bring an industry to town, you're going to give them certain incentives to entice them to come. If you don't, they'll go somewhere else. Simple as that. And I would imagine the big thing that they are going through or having to get their hands around is that the size of this transformational entity coming to Rock Hill is so much bigger that the incentives need to be so much more big. I mean, they be bigger.
My understanding, and again, I'm not on the county council. I'm not expert on where they are in their in the process. But my understanding now is sort of the question is what percentage of the tax revenue generated by this project can be used to support horizontal infrastructure, which is to say water and sewer, roads, curb and gutter, to support the actual project, right? So right. The question is not what size tax break do the Panthers get. The question is how much of the Panthers' own tax revenue can be used to support infrastructure around that site so that it doesn't create traffic problems, so that it doesn't place a burden on everybody else's infrastructure. And look, that's a complicated question, and again, I'm grateful to the county council for doing due diligence to the extent they are.
Well, I'm just like you. I'm on the outside looking in, and I have no inside information, but it seems to me you got 200 acres of dirt out there that produces nothing in the way of tax revenue.
Yeah, I think the school district got $644 off of that piece of property last year.
Okay.
And then no matter how you know how much of the money ultimately gets devoted to infrastructure versus general fund. It's multiple millions now to the schools.
And whatever new tax revenue comes out of there will be a result of the buildings that they put up.
That's right.
And until they put the buildings up, there's no new tax revenue.
That's right.
And if you have to give a whole bunch back to get those new buildings, you're still getting an incremental amount of new revenue you didn't have before.
It's net positive to taxpayers.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's move on to something that's simpler.
Simpler.
Yeah.
All right.
Santee Cooper.
Santee Cooper. Yeah, another real simple issue there.
All right. When you guys ended and we only have a few minutes left here.
Okay.
When you ended the last session, you all agreed to get, I think, three separate types of proposals, one for selling the plant, one for keeping it with new management, and one was whatever the other one was.
Yeah, internal reform.
Internal reform. Okay. Yeah. So where are we?
So you're right. The General Assembly passed legislation last year that set out a three-part process for deciding what to do with Santee Cooper. That's run through the State Department of Administration. The Department of Administration has received bids to purchase Santee Cooper. They've received bids from third-party managers who would come in and, you know, run Santee Cooper, and they've also received a reform proposal from the current management at Santee Cooper. By the statute that was passed in the last session, the Department of Administration had a January 15th deadline to complete that process with an option to avail themselves of a 60-day extension. They are going to take a little bit more time, but my understanding is it'll come in well inside of the 60-day extension.
Okay.
So that's where it is now. And then the debate is the debate that's been the debate about Santee Cooper the whole time. Do you sell it? Do you let some third-party private partner come in and manage it, or do you trust Santee Cooper to reform itself out of this hole that they put themselves in?
Well, the governor made it very clear he wants to sell it.
He wants
to get the monkey off his back.
And I'm with the governor on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. All right, we got about 30 seconds left. This is an election year.
It is.
And that means you're up for election.
On the ballot.
Woohoo!
Yeah, I know.
All right. I mean, everybody in the General Assembly is up this year?
Yep, House and Senate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so you're going to run again?
I'm running again.
You're sure?
I'm sure. Yeah, I did a campaign kickoff in November and was just overwhelmed with the amount of support, both folks who were with me in 2016 and some new folks who have come on board in the intervening period. And, we're ready to hit the ground running. Come what may, I'm running.
What about term limits? Do you term limit yourself? Two terms, three terms?
I do, yeah. And matter of fact, that's another issue we should talk about. There's going to be, I hope, fingers crossed, that we can get a term limits bill out of the Judiciary Committee this year and get that bill on the floor.
Okay. With that, we got to say goodbye. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
State Senator Wes Clymer.
Always
and two
pleasure.
Of his five kids and love his beautiful wife all here today.
That's right.
Isn't that lovely? You really have six kids, right? Six kids. All right. That'll wrap up our Straight Talk program. Live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Okay, Jack Monroe, are you guys ready? Here we go, one more time. Fresh subs and salads prepared right before your eyes. Tell State Representative Randy Graham how to do this. At the count of three. One, two, three. Slice, slice, slice. Yard, yard, yard.
Good job, fellas.
What'd I call him? Oh, well, what the hell? Same thing. Have a wonderful day. Bye.
WRHI Rock Hill.
Good Pharmacy, Rock Hill's hometown pharmacy for over 50 years. Camden Avenue at Ebenezer Road.